From Pacifica Network, this is Democracy Now!, broadcasting from Washington, D.C.
I, George Walker Bush.
I, George Walker Bush.
Do solemnly swear.
Do solemnly swear.
That I will faithfully execute.
That I will faithfully execute.
The office of President of the United States.
The office of President of the United States.
Inauguration 2005. More than 100,000 converge on the nation's capital. Many to celebrate, others to mourn.
You can't put a price on what I've given to this country. I gave them my oldest son.
The ceremony and the sorrow of a divided nation. And as the inauguration shuts down Washington, D.C., thousands of activists face off against the massive security apparatus deployed in the nation's capital. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. President Bush vowed Thursday in his second inauguration address to spread freedom around the globe and to target the world's tyrannies. Bush pledged to purge the world of undemocratic government, saying, quote, "Today America speaks anew to the peoples of the world. All who live in tyranny and hopelessness can know the United States will not ignore your oppression or excuse your oppressors." Bush said the spread of liberty around the world was the, quote, "calling of our time." He mentioned the words liberty and freedom more than 40 times, but never directly mentioned Iran or Afghanistan. Kenneth Roth, executive director of Human Rights Watch, said Bush deliberately focused on liberty instead of human rights. Roth said, quote, "It's easy to say I'm for liberty, but difficult to say I'm for human rights when he's overseeing what we know is a conscious policy of coercive interrogation, including inhuman treatment and sometimes torture." The Washington Post noted that some of the administration's closest allies in the war on terror, including Egypt, Saudi Arabia, Pakistan, and Uzbekistan, are ranked by the State Department as among the worst human rights abusers. Julian Borger of the Guardian newspaper described the speech as a radical address and, quote, "arguably the most combative inauguration speech in 50 years. Borger writes, quote, "Bush nailed his colors once and for all to the neoconservative mast, committing himself to an activist foreign policy." Bush spoke shortly after being sworn in by the ailing Chief Justice William Rehnquist. Senator Trent Lott served as the master of ceremonies for the inauguration. While Bush was vowing to spread freedom around the globe, law enforcement agents were hauling off several demonstrators who attempted to protest during the speech. Some 10,000 protesters marched in a demonstration organized by the D.C. Anti-War Network. Thousands more lined the parade route holding signs accusing President Bush of war crimes and calling for the end of the Iraq War. Members of the Black Bloc also successfully blocked many Bush supporters from reaching their seats after they forced the police to shut down two entry points to the seating area. Police reported making 14 arrests during the inauguration celebrations, but targeted many more people with pepper spray. Another 865 were arrested last night after a group of anarchists staged an unpermitted march through the Adams Morgan neighborhood. Participants in the march shattered the front door of a Riggs Bank. Protests were also held across the country, including in Los Angeles and San Francisco, Tucson, Atlanta, Denver, Sacramento, Milwaukee, New Orleans, and Portland, Oregon. Hours before the inauguration, Vice President Cheney warned Iran has become the top threat to world peace. He accused Iran of building a, quote, "fairly robust new nuclear program." Cheney didn't rule out a U.S. attack, but suggested that Israel might strike Iran first. He said, quote, "Given the fact Iran has a stated policy that their objective is the destruction of Israel, the Israelis might well decide to act first and let the rest of the world worry about cleaning up the diplomatic mess afterwards. Israel has carried out such attacks before. In 1981, Israeli warplanes bombed an Iraqi nuclear reactor. Cheney's comments come just days after The New Yorker magazine reported that the United States has already sent troops into Iran to search for possible sites to attack. On Tuesday, Secretary of State nominee Condoleezza Rice named Iran as one of the six so-called outposts of tyranny. Also named were North Korea, Burma, Cuba, Belarus, and Zimbabwe. Meanwhile, Cheney made a rare admission that mistakes had been made in Iraq. He said the U.S. miscalculated what a post-Saddam Hussein Iraq would look like, saying, quote, "I thought things would have recovered more quickly." In other Iraq news, CNN's reporting intelligence sources estimate 150 car bombings and 250 suicide attacks are being planned over the next week to disrupt the January 30th election. On Wednesday, 10 car bombings were reported. Earlier today, a car bomb exploded outside a Shiite mosque in Baghdad, killing at least 14 people and injuring 40. On Thursday, an audio recording purportedly by militant Abu Musab al-Zarqawi warned that the war against the U.S. presence in Iraq would last for years. Meanwhile, The Washington Post reports the U.S. is now holding nearly 8,000 Iraqis in prison, marking the highest total since March. This is Inauguration 2005, Democracy Now! Special, the battle for democracy.
Will you raise your right hand, Mr. President, and repeat after me? I, George Walker Bush.
I, George Walker Bush.
Do solemnly swear.
Do solemnly swear.
That I will faithfully execute.
That I will faithfully execute.
The office of President of the United States.
The office of President of the United States.
And will to the best of my ability.
And will to the best of my ability.
Preserve, protect, and defend.
Preserve, protect, and defend.
The Constitution of the United States.
The Constitution of the United States.
So help me God.
So help me God.
Congratulations.
Inauguration 2005, a Democracy Now! Special. I am Amy Goodman. George Bush taking the oath of office for a second term yesterday in Washington, D.C., sworn in outside the Capitol by Chief Justice William Rehnquist, who made his first official appearance since beginning treatment for thyroid cancer in October. More than 100,000 people gathered outside the Capitol Thursday as the 55th presidential inauguration took place under unprecedented security. After President Bush and Vice President Dick Cheney were sworn in, President Bush vowed to spread freedom around the globe and to target the world's tyrannies in his second inauguration address.
You're led by events and common sense, to one conclusion. The survival of liberty in our land increasingly depends on the success of liberty in other lands. The best hope for peace in our world is the expansion of freedom in all the world. America's vital interests and our deepest beliefs are now one. From the day of our founding, we have proclaimed that every man and woman on this earth has rights and dignity and matchless value because they bear the image of the Maker of heaven and earth. Across the generations, we have proclaimed the imperative of self-government because no one is fit to be a master and no one deserves to be a slave. Advancing these ideals is the mission that created our nation. It is the honorable achievement of our fathers. Now it is the urgent requirement of our nation's security and the calling of our time. So it is the policy of the United States to seek and support the growth of democratic movements and institutions in every nation and culture with the ultimate goal of ending tyranny in our world. This is not primarily the task of arms, though we will defend ourselves and our friends by force of arms when necessary. Freedom, by its nature, must be chosen and defended by citizens and sustained by the rule of law and the protection of minorities. And when the soul of a nation finally speaks, the institutions that arise may reflect customs and traditions very different from our own. America will not impose our own style of government on the unwilling. Our goal instead is to help others find their own voice, attain their own freedom, and make their own way. The great objective of ending tyranny is the concentrated work of generations. The difficulty of the task is no excuse for avoiding it. America's influence is not unlimited. But fortunately for the oppressed, America's influence is considerable, and we will use it confidently in freedom's cause. My most solemn duty is to protect this nation and its people from further attacks and emerging threats. Some have unwisely chosen to test America's resolve and have found it firm. We will persistently clarify the choice before every ruler in every nation, the moral choice between oppression, which is always wrong, and freedom, which is eternally right. America will not pretend that jailed dissidents prefer their chains, or that women welcome humiliation and servitude, or that any human being aspires to live at the mercy of bullies. We will encourage reform in other governments by making clear that success in our relations will require the decent treatment of their own people. America's belief in human dignity will guide our policies. Yet rights must be more than the grudging concessions of dictators. They are secured by free dissent and the participation of the governed. In the long run, there is no justice without freedom, and there can be no human rights without human liberty.
President Bush delivering his inaugural address in Washington, D.C. Well, a few seconds before President Bush was sworn in by Chief Justice William Rehnquist, a group of three activists from Eugene, Oregon, disrupted the ceremony. One of them, Carol Malia, filmed their action. We spoke with her after they were escorted out of the ceremony.
My name is Carol Malia. I'm from Eugene, Oregon, and I'm here with my friends Peter Shabarek and Willow Rose. And we came to Washington, D.C. to see the president get sworn in. About last July, I decided I wanted to come here and protest the war. No matter who won the election, I was going to be here if Kerry won. And I've got three draft-age kids. I'm here to make sure that they don't get drafted. So in August, I called and got tickets from Senator DeFazio, and we ended up arriving on Saturday night. Today, we showed up at 8:30. We waited 3 hours along with all the other Republicans, spent the time conversing, sharing stories about our families, and basically developing rapport. Then they started the festivities about 11 o'clock. We decided we needed to wait for an opening. We didn't want to interrupt any noise. We decided we wanted to shout, "Stop the war," at some point when people would be listening. So as soon as we heard them introduce Rehnquist, we realized that they were just about to do the swearing-in of Bush. We stood up, left our seats, walked out into the aisle, and shouted, "Stop the war."
Stop the war!
Stop the war!
Bring home the truth!
Three Eugene, Oregon activists at the inauguration ceremony. One of the people who were sitting in front of them came up to them with a bottle of water and threw it over them, knocking two of them down. Eventually, they were escorted out of the ceremony. Meanwhile, some 10,000 demonstrators converged on Washington, D.C. to protest the presidential inauguration of George Bush amidst the tightest security inauguration history. Protesters marched in a demonstration through Malcolm X Park that ended in a die-in. Thousands more lined the parade route holding signs accusing President Bush of war crimes, calling for the end of the Iraq War and turning their backs on the presidential motorcade. Members of the Black Bloc also successfully blocked many Bush supporters from reaching their seats after they forced the police to shut down two entry points to the seating area. Police reported making 14 arrests during the inauguration celebrations, but targeted many more people with pepper spray. The Answer Coalition secured a permit to stage a counter-inauguration protest at John Marshall Park, which lasted throughout the day. It was the first time in inaugural history that the anti-war movement was able to have bleachers, a stage, and a sound system for a mass anti-war demonstration directly on the parade route. Dozens of speakers took to the stage throughout the day, among them former U.S. Attorney General Ramsey Clark.
Really, to support and defend the Constitution of the United States, we have to take the Constitution back. Back from crimes against peace, from war crimes and crimes against humanity. You know, the Nuremberg Tribunal called the war of aggression the supreme international crime. And it is. And George W. Bush has waged a war of aggression against Iraq. He's killed more than 100,000 people. Are their lives worth nothing? Can we have a moment of silence in memory of all the people who've died in Iraq because of the criminal acts of George W. Bush in waging this war of aggression? Every moment of their lives is fraught with danger right now because of us. The world is the most dangerous place it's ever been now because of what our country has done and is doing. And we have to take it back. We can't wait 4 more years. There can't be any more Fallujahs. Fallujah is the 21st century equivalent of Guernica. We just went in and destroyed that city. Drove the people out, killed them, thousands, we don't know how many. They won't even bother to count who's been killed or how many or estimate how many. They just keep killing. Almost every day we're reading about another checkpoint where some family got wiped out because they didn't do what they were supposed to do, according to the military there. Abu Ghraib is unbelievable in the innocent times of 1961. That we would torture people that way. And on the instructions of the President of the United States and his highest legal advisors, torture's okay, they said. Go for it, fellas. If we can't renounce that and remove it from office, then the Constitution doesn't work anymore. We've got to do more than take back the Constitution. There has to be accountability for what's happened. The Constitution says that the President, Vice President, and other officials of the United States shall be removed from office upon impeachment for and conviction of high crimes and misdemeanors. If you care about the Constitution, you better start talking to your member of the House of Representatives and say impeachment now is essential to the integrity of the United States government. And the future of the United States. We've had more than 500,000 people sign on, vote to impeach. We need to get 5 million, and we need to get 5 million on there quick. And then the Congress will react. The Congress understands something when the people demand it. And the power is in the people. Always has been. The question is whether the people have the will to exercise it. I think the imperative challenge of the American people now is to live up to the Constitution and demand the impeachment of George W. Bush and the other officials of the government responsible for these crimes. Thank you very much.
Former U.S. Attorney General Ramsey Clark protesting the second inauguration of President George W. Bush. We'll come back with our Inauguration 2005 special in a minute.
System. A lot of families find it hard to make a living. To be young and unemployed is an everyday thing. That's why so many youths gone ragamuffin. I know we struggle, but we never give in. Hey, hey, struggle, but we never give in. No way, struggle, but we never give in. Hey, hey, struggle, but we never give in. When the next election comes, I won't be voting. Cause every government try the same old thing. Promise this, promise that, they promise everything. But when they get in power, a different thing. They forget about the homeless that need housing. Forget about the youth that need better schooling. Forget about everything that means something to the people in the ghettos that are struggling. I know we struggle, but we never give in. Hey, hey, struggle, but we never give in. No way, struggle, but we never give in. Hey, hey, struggle, but we never give in.
Pato Bantan, Never Give In, here on Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report, and the largest public media collaboration in the country, broadcasting on over 300 stations, NPR stations, Pacifica stations, and radio affiliates, as well as public access TV stations and PBS stations on both TV satellite networks, Dish Networks Channel 9415, Free Speech TV, and Link TV at 9410, as well as DirecTV Channel 375. And we video and audio stream at democracynow.org and have closed captioning for the deaf and hard of hearing. I'm Amy Goodman. As we continue with our Inauguration 2005 special, The Battle for Democracy. Amid the massive security operation in Washington, D.C. for the inauguration, thousands marched through the Capitol to demonstrate their opposition to the wide range of policies of the Bush administration, particularly the occupation of Iraq. Many thousands more made it onto the actual parade route, holding anti-war signs. Some people turned their backs as the Bush motorcade passed by. In addition to the disruption of the inauguration just before President Bush was sworn in, there was at least one other action during the ceremony. Activists from Code Pink were detained by police after they chanted during President Bush's speech. Meanwhile, on the streets outside the parade route, activists faced off against a sizable police presence. A number of times through the day, police fired chemical agents at demonstrators and beat people with metal whip-like canes. Democracy Now! Camera crews were on the streets, and we talked to some of those engaged in protest.
My name is Charles Holman. I'm from Brandywine, Maryland, and I'm here to protest the inauguration of the war president, George Bush.
So why come out today? Why are you protesting?
I'm here because we should be working towards peace, and George Bush is, you know, started a war based on lies, and he wants to continue his war for defense contract monies or whatever reasons he has, and I'm against that. George Bush is not helping to heal wounds. I think he's throwing salt in the wounds by continuing this war, and as of today, 1,370 people, Americans, have been killed in Iraq, and he's calling for, you know, more troops to go over there. I say bring them home.
Cookie Smith, I'm from Wilmington, Delaware, and I'm here because I am really against Bush's policies, especially in the Iraq war, and also here at home with all the violence and problems that are going on here at home. I think we need to concentrate on that. I think we need to come out of Iraq right away. He's saying there's not going to be a draft, but I don't believe that. And I have a 23-year-old daughter, several nephews and nieces that are in that age group, and I say my daughter and my nieces and nephews can go when Barbara and Jenna go.
Are you with a group?
Turn your back on Bush.
So you're going in to do that?
Yes.
What is Turn Your Back on Bush? What do they do?
It's an organization. We're peaceful. We're nonviolent. We are here to turn our back on Bush. When he rides by, we are going to turn our backs because we don't believe his policies and his what he's done for the country for the past 4 years. A lot of us, we are not wealthy. We didn't get the big tax cuts, and we really want to unite this nation. But, you know, Bush is not the person to do it.
I'm Elizabeth McAllister. I'm with the Jonah House community in Baltimore. And I'm walking today because of the obscenity that this administration is. And the coronation is part of the obscenity.
Approaching the police line, and suddenly they started pepper spraying us. Then we got pushed from behind, we got pushed back from ahead, and the cops pushed me back. They knocked my glasses off, and they pepper sprayed me from right here. And then as I tried to get up, they kicked me a few more times, and they threw me down as I tried to get back. And they must have thrown me down three or four times as I tried to get back to the other people who were going away.
My name's Nathan Kolpitz, and I'm here because I'm sick of what George Bush is doing to our country.
Where are you from?
I'm from New Hampshire.
You came from New Hampshire?
Yeah.
Why?
Because I don't like what Bush is doing, and I don't support him. I just don't think that he deserves to be president of this country.
Some people are saying this is a day when everyone should come together. It's the inauguration of everyone's president.
I agree. I think we should come together against the president.
We
I don't
are together.
We're together, but we're not together for the president.
Hi, and who are you?
I'm his father. Uh-huh. I brought him down for his birthday. And I'm so furious because they won't let us in to see the inauguration because we have these un-American backpacks.
Did you have tickets?
I didn't know you needed tickets. I thought it was a public event. We have backpacks with food and clothing in them, and they won't let us in because we have backpacks.
During the inauguration parade, there was a senior citizen lady who was standing in front of us, and she had a sign, and she couldn't see, and she was obviously tired and wanted to sit down. There was a small place where people with tickets were being let in, and the woman said, okay, now any senior citizens or young children who want to sit who don't have tickets can come in. And when the old lady asked to go in, she said, you have to get rid of the sign.
What did the sign say?
The sign it had a picture of Bush and Cheney behind bars, and it said, I have a dream.
Just some of the voices of protests in the streets of Washington, D.C. in this inauguration 2005. As other activists face off against police in the streets, thousands of Bush supporters were waiting in long security lines to get into the parade grounds. In a number of cases, men in cowboy hats and women in mink fur coats were fully immersed in crowds of young activists wearing bandanas on their faces. The activists forced the closure of at least two entry points, leaving many Bush supporters out of the parade. We talked with some of those stranded Bush supporters in the streets outside the inaugural procession route.
I am Pat Rowe, and I'm from Dallas, Texas. And I love Bush, and I love his family, and I love America.
And do you know his family?
Actually, they go to our church and in Dallas at Highland Park Methodist. And occasionally when Laura's in Dallas, she comes and sits right in front of us.
What do you like about President Bush?
I like his beliefs. I like his policies. And I think he's a truly honest man. And I think he's going to lead our country into a better world and the world into a better world.
And what was his message today?
His message today, I think, was about freedom and bringing freedom to the world.
And how was the inauguration?
Fantastic. What a patriotic day.
And what do you most like about President Bush?
His faith-valued ways to run the United States and all the things he's doing. You know, obviously we have to break into a war to make some right things happen. I think a lot of people demonstrating do not understand what's going on over Iraq. And then once they did, they'd understand why we're there.
Why are we there?
To clean up a dynasty of Hussein. He was dominating, killing everybody, and a lot of folks don't fully understand that.
Are you concerned about the servicemen and women who are coming home in body bags wounded?
Absolutely. I mean, that's just the cost of national and worldwide freedom, so that's a definite, has to happen.
And what's your name?
Matt.
And what's your name?
John.
And where are you from?
Indianapolis as well.
Uh-huh. And what did you think of the inauguration?
It was a fabulous display of democracy in this world.
What is the issue that is most important to you?
World peace. And you get world peace by doing away with people that don't want peace. And if you don't show strength through what we stand for, then somebody else is going to be stronger than us and take us over. So we have to show our strength and put our foot down and do away with tyranny.
And when you say do away with people who don't want peace, what do you mean by that?
Well, people like Saddam Hussein, the Osama bin Ladens, the dictators of the world that are more interested in their own greedy power than allowing people to have their freedom and peace in this world.
We have enjoyed it very much. We're very pleased with George Bush winning.
Uh-huh.
Very, very pleased.
What was his message?
His message was ownership society for everybody. Everybody in this country is going to own a part of the American dream.
And where are you from?
I am from Cuba, and I own a part of the American dream because instead of fooling around, I work hard, and I made it.
What do you think of the protests here today?
I think they are entitled because that's what America's about. You know, everybody has freedom of speech.
Thank you. And your name?
Vivian Hudson.
Thank you. For soldiers who come back and say it's wrong, and for the poll that just said that most people actually think the Iraq invasion was wrong, the situation is bad now in Iraq, what do you say?
I disagree, because I think that the people, especially the women there, are much better off than they were before. And I think we did make some mistakes, but I think President Bush is admitting what he has done wrong, maybe a little bit, he was a little bit ahead of himself on some things. But overall, I think he is a good man. He is a fabulous person, and they don't understand. He's got a good heart.
Hi, how'd you enjoy the inauguration?
I have this side. This is the first CAV, support the troops. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it immensely, really. I was here 4 years ago, and it was drizzling, so this was much better weather.
And where are you from?
Rhode Island.
What was President Bush's message?
President Bush's message is that we're going to stay on track with the war in Iraq. It's our duty and our obligation to help other people that aren't as free as we are.
And how did you feel about the protests?
They have a right to do it. They did get out of hand. They were throwing things at people. I did exchange a few words with some person, totally on a philosophical point of view. We weren't arguing or anything. You know, they have a right to do it.
What do you think of people who are protesting war and saying, support our troops, bring them home?
You're not supporting the troops by protesting the war. If you're protesting the war, you're not supporting the troops because you're not sticking up for what the troops are doing and what the troops believe in. All the media talks about are the one or two that are dissenting, but the majority of the troops over there are not dissenting with the president, and they feel good about what they're doing over there. They feel they're accomplishing something for the Iraqi people.
And do you know anyone there?
My son.
Where is he?
He's in Baghdad.
How long has he been there?
He's been there since last March.
And how is it for him now?
He constantly calls me or writes me and says things are going well. He did call me and say that they've stepped things up. But he feels good about what he's doing because he sees the people in Iraq. He trains the Iraqi National Guard. So he knows that he's doing something good for their country.
What's your name?
Linda Worden.
And what's his name?
Gregory.
Mothers and sons, some who supported President Bush yesterday and others who didn't. Last night, on the steps of the church in Washington, D.C., one of the churches, a Quaker church in Washington, were scores of army boots commemorating the more than 1,300 U.S. soldiers who've died in Iraq. Inside the church, hundreds more boots. There were also hundreds of pairs of civilian shoes representing the more than 100,000 Iraqis who have died since the invasion began. At the rally outside, family members of soldiers killed in Iraq spoke out against war, protesting President Bush's second inauguration. Among them, Celeste Zapala, mother of Sherwood Baker, killed in Iraq in Baghdad April 2004. She is part of a newly formed group of families who've lost loved ones in Iraq called Gold Star Families.
Yesterday, as many of us gathered here for the events of the inauguration, Gold Star Families for Peace went to the Pentagon with hope of seeing and speaking with Donald Rumsfeld. Unfortunately, Mr. Rumsfeld chose once again to ignore us. And in my thought, he ignores not only those of us who traveled to see him, but he refuses to look at the face, the reality of those you see symbolized in front of us. The gates were shut to us, but had I seen Mr. Rumsfeld, this is what I wanted to tell him, that I am the mother of three sons. One of my sons is a teacher. One works to eradicate hunger, but the one I am missing was a caseworker for mentally challenged adults in Wilkes-Barre in Pennsylvania. He was 30 years old. He was the father of a little boy, now 10. And he was the husband of Debbie. He went to King's College in Wilkes-Barre. And at one point, he was helping people to sandbag the Susquehanna River, which was overflowing, and he was recruited by the National Guardsmen who were working there and asked to join the National Guard. And he became, he told us that he really liked the company of the people who were there. They told him that he might have the chance to pay off his college loans and that he would have the chance to serve his community. Like many of you, we were frightened by the war clouds forming as talk of the invasion of Iraq grew. And I knew in particular what that might mean to my son in the National Guard. We opposed the invasion and worked against it. As the months drew on, it became obvious to all that that invasion was turning out to be a terrible error. Sherwood was called up and went to Iraq in the beginning of March. He arrived in Baghdad on the 13th of March and was assigned to the Iraq
survey group, the people looking for the weapons of mass destruction. On the evening of April the 26th, my dog began to bark and there was someone at the door. I answered the door and in the dim light, it was just this time of day, was a sergeant major. At first I didn't understand why he was there, and then it became clear to me. He had come to tell me that my sweet child had been killed that morning in Baghdad. He had come to tell me that he was the 720th soldier to die for this hideous miscalculation called the war in Iraq. He had come to say that Sherwood Baker was the first National Guardsman to die in combat in Pennsylvania since 1945. All who are silent in the face of this war are complicit in its action. And none of us can bear that sin of silence. And so we gather once again with these boots, and the numbers have grown. 856 in July, 1,370 today. And behind everyone is a family who every day cries for the one they've lost and whose lives will never recover. And I know that things will change, events will change, and some will look at this war and call it good and profitable. And they will try to forget the faces, the memory, the boots of all these dear souls. And the 100,000 Iraqis who lie in their own land. And so I'd urge you to, and pray for you and for all of us to not be overcome by cynicism and grief, but to take hope from each other, take hope from what the real sacrifices have been, and stand to tell the truth.
Celeste Zapala lost her son Sherwood Baker in Baghdad, Iraq. This is Democracy Now! When we come back from our break, we'll hear from another of the mothers who lost her sons, who Donald Rumsfeld refused to see this week. And then we'll talk about the tactics in the streets and hear from Congressmember Cynthia McKinney. Stay with us.
Rulers of the nations, as you fuss and fight over who owns this or that and who has the right to design, build, sell, and store and fire all the bombs and guns to defend your holy empire. There are children hungry, children sick and dying. There are mothers, fathers, sisters, brothers crying. They're only pawns in your play of power and corruption. Slowly starve them, your new weapon of mass destruction. And prove to me, America, that you care. And prove to me, America, you're aware. Who's dying for your freedom in this land? Who pays the cost for the liberties you demand?
Sarah Thompson. Is it for freedom? Here on Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. At the church last night, in addition to Celeste Zapala, there were a number of people who spoke who lost their loved ones. Cindy Sheehan, his son Casey, killed in Iraq last April, also addressed the crowd.
Hi. I've had a very busy day today. Well, yesterday I was with Celeste when we tried to get a meeting with our Secretary of Defense. And we've been trying for weeks. We've been emailing, writing, calling. They finally stopped taking our calls. And I just saw all these people today cheering for them and their policies. And I think if I had like 25 grand, I would probably have access to everybody in this administration. But I've paid a price that is priceless. You can't put a price on what I've given to this country. I gave them my oldest son, not my only son, but my oldest son. And they don't even have the courtesy to reply to us, to say, no, we're not going to meet with you, or, you know, maybe later, would you like to meet with another aide? They don't even have the courtesy to meet with Gold Star families. I was on Good Morning America this morning, and they asked me why I opposed the inauguration, and I said, while these people are partying tonight, there's going to be more bloodshed. And I just think it's very inappropriate to celebrate when there's millions of people in harm's way.
Cindy Sheehan lost her son, Casey, in Iraq. She was speaking yesterday at a display of 1,370 pairs of shoes to remember the 1,370 U.S. servicemen and women killed in Iraq. Also civilian shoes there as well to remember Iraqi civilians who have died at a display that is traveling around the country called Eyes Wide Open that was started by the American Friends Service Committee. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. As we report throughout this show, the security apparatus for the inauguration has been unprecedented. More than 7,000 law enforcement officers from over 100 different agencies were deployed in the streets and throughout the greater D.C. area. There were also National Guard and Army officers at various checkpoints throughout the parade grounds. There were also undercover police, some of whom were dressed like protesters. In a story that our own Jeremy Scahill witnessed yesterday. Jeremy Scahill, Democracy Now! Correspondent and producer. He joins us now in our Washington studio. Welcome, Jeremy.
Well, Amy, we were in the streets quite a bit yesterday, you and I and the crew from Democracy Now!, and we got caught in some of the most violent exchanges that occurred yesterday at the heart of a scene early on in the day when about 1,500 or so Black Bloc protesters broke off from the main Dawn March and held a spontaneous march through the city and attempted to gain access to the parade ground. And then the police responded with quite a significant amount of brutality, hitting people, using some form of chemical agents, spraying people with high-velocity sort of mini-cannons. And so we were kind of moving with that crew throughout the day.
And I have to say, in that situation, what we found, one of the things, as we were pushed up against the stores, people we thought were just passers-by who were also there, suddenly, at the moment where the police moved in, were pushing us into the crowd, and
right.
It turned out they were undercover police officers. They
right.
were dressed in suits.
And there also, as well, were people in military uniform. I remember one naval officer, a guy who was about in his 40s, shoving people, methodically shoving them back into the direction of what was being sprayed at the crowd. And the police were also using these metal whips that almost look like a larger version of an antenna on a car, and they would whip them out, and then they were hitting people with them. So there were a number of these exchanges that happened in this area around 13th and Pennsylvania ultimately was where it ended up, and one of the main access routes to the parade grounds where people were lining up. Well, there were a number of confrontations throughout the day between Black Bloc protesters and then women in mink fur coats, men in cowboy hats, and some of the most creative demonstrations took place there, where people were charging toward the lines where the supporters of Bush were lining up to get in, and some of the protesters would charge toward them, and then they would flee, and they actually forced the police to shut down two of the access points for people going onto the parade ground. Well, we were sort of monitoring the situation in that area, and as the day moved on and the parade ended, people started filing out of the parade grounds, and there was some people burning an American flag, and there was some arguments going on between Bush supporters and protesters. And we were interviewing people, and I noticed that a large column of riot police were sort of in a methodical way exiting the parade ground through a security tent, and it appeared as though they were marching in formation, not simply leaving. And so I thought, I'm going to go check this out. This may be another attempt to confront demonstrators, perhaps spray them again. So I started to walk over there. As I walked toward this column of the riot police that were coming out, I noticed two what I thought were activists who seemed to kind of be swaying into the line of riot police. So I paid attention to it because I thought, this is extraordinary. They look like they're about to fall into them, and I thought they were going to get their heads cracked. And so one of them was a young woman who had a very colorful mohawk, and the other was a white male, about 6'2", who was wearing a keffiyeh, an Arab scarf, and a ski jacket. And both of them looked like any number of people we had seen in the streets. And so I thought that they were falling into this column of riot police, and that the riot police were trying to arrest the woman, and that the man in the keffiyeh was pulling her away. But as I watched it more closely, I realized that the man in the keffiyeh, the Arab scarf, was actually trying to get this woman with the mohawk to the ground. And ultimately, he put his knee in her back. He pulled out a metal pair of handcuffs, not the plastic cuffs, from behind himself, and he cuffed her. And the riot police seemed like they had no idea what was going on. Another man comes over, also dressed like a protester, wearing a black leather jacket, also with a keffiyeh, an Arab scarf around him. And he sort of intervened and essentially got the riot police to understand that these two were officers who were arresting this young woman with the mohawk. Once the demonstrators, other demonstrators, realized what was going on, they began to chant, let her go, let her go. And so surrounded by this mass of riot cops, these two undercover police officers dressed not just like protesters, but like protesters wearing Arab scarves around their necks, which is very common now among Palestinian solidarity activists, activists who are opposed to the war in Iraq, sort of become a symbol of the resistance in this country and around the world. And so they marched this young woman all the way up the street and put her into a police wagon, and the police beating people along the way. So this is very similar to what we also witnessed in Miami when we saw at the FTAA meetings a plainclothes officer dressed like an activist actually taser another activist.
And we're going to talk more about the tactics of undercover police officers and lawsuits here in the district against the use of undercover police officers in one case of a lawsuit as provocateurs next week.
And Amy, I want to add that we will put the pictures of these undercover police officers on the Democracy Now! Website, and people can go to that at democracynow.org to see these plainclothes officers exactly as we've described them.
Jeremy Scahill, Democracy Now! Producer and correspondent, as we turn now to Congressmember Cynthia McKinney. Yes, she's back. She's in Congress representing Georgia. And yesterday she was at the inauguration, well, at the counter-inauguration. She was protesting and speaking out. Cynthia McKinney.
We come here today because we believe in a just America, a good America, a strong America, able to help people here and all over the world. We see humanity as our family, and we know that we are indeed our brother's keepers. Therefore, we should export books, not bombs. Doctors, not depleted uranium. Dignity, not dictatorships. As a country, we must reclaim our heart and lead with love. I also want to say thank you to the voters of the 4th District of Georgia, and, of course, to all of you, because I have been sworn in as your representative in the United States Congress. And in Congress, we will be a voice for peace, dignity, justice once again. So lift me up in your thoughts and in your prayers, because I need it. Our country also needs you. Thank you very much.
Georgia Congressmember Cynthia McKinney speaking yesterday at the counter-inaugural protests in Washington, D.C. This is Democracy Now! Along the protest parade route was an interesting sight as thousands of protesters came down the street. One building was wrapped in a banner that said that they would be open for business no matter what took place. It was the local Planned Parenthood affiliate. And outside, the CEO and president of Planned Parenthood of Metropolitan Washington was handing out condoms to people in the crowd. Well, tomorrow, Saturday, is the 32nd anniversary of Roe v. Wade, when the Supreme Court handed down its landmark decision. By a vote of 7-2, the justices legalized abortion and instantly voided state laws prohibiting abortion. Before the historic Supreme Court decision, abortion was illegal in almost every state. After the decision, states immediately began passing restrictive legislation. Congress passed the Hyde Amendment, which withholds federal Medicaid funding for abortions for poor women except to save a woman's life. Some states passed laws requiring a husband's consent, parental consent laws, and 24-hour waiting periods. Today, we are joined by Jatrice Martel-Gator, the president and CEO of Planned Parenthood, Metropolitan Washington, D.C. Welcome.
Thank you.
So you were handing out condoms in the crowd, and you were also having a special event as we look forward this weekend.
Yes.
In Washington, D.C. What's happening at Planned Parenthood?
Well, first of all, Planned Parenthood is going to be under siege this weekend because protesters from all over the country are busing in school children and college children to come in front of our clinics and have a 24-hour vigil. The march for people who are opposed to women's reproductive health rights takes place on Monday, and some of them are staying across the street from our clinic. And so we decided that we're going to stay open, too, and we're providing services from 8 a.m. until 9 p.m. on Saturday, and we are booked. People are coming in to take advantage of this opportunity, and we're going to stay open all night until 8 a.m. the next morning. We're having a pro-choice movie night. We're showing four pro-choice movies throughout the night, such as Cider House Rules and Iron Jawed Eagles. And so we're determined to let people know that in Planned Parenthood clinics, we are providing health care for over 26,000 men, women, and teens in this community and all over the country. This is what's going on in Planned Parenthood's. We are providing basic reproductive health care. About less than 10% of what we do is abortion. And if these people who are here to protest and stand on the sidewalks really and truly wanted to decrease the number of abortions in this country, then they would join us in providing birth control, accurate medical information to teens and young people about abstinence-based teen pregnancy prevention programs, not abstinence only. So they can't have it both ways. You can't be opposed to abortion and opposed to birth control, emergency contraception, and accurate medical information, and then you don't care about children once they're born. So we're taking a stand, we're being vigilant, and we have a lot of supporters who will be with us at Planned Parenthood on Saturday for 24 hours, and I will be there.
Well, I want to thank you very much for being with us today. Jatrice Martel-Gator, president and CEO of Planned Parenthood of Metropolitan Washington. Thanks for joining us. As we wrap up our Inauguration 2005 special, The Battle for Democracy. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Berkshire, Abdul Qudus, Anna Nagara, Elizabeth Press, John Hamilton, Elizabeth Press, Jeremy Scahill. Special thanks to Carol Melia, Roger Hill, Indie Media, Jackie Suin, and Dennis Moynihan. Our website is democracynow.org. Thanks to the Reuters team here in Washington, D.C. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us for Democracy Now!